WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning, it's the 30th of January, 2019. Titled my show here, 11, 12, and 13. I'm going to be airing The Adventures of Superman. I've been playing 10 episodes of Is There Another Superman? Which is kind of interesting. If you've been following along, they'll recap it when I start here. This The Adventures of Superman actually aired from 1940 to 1951. It jumped around, started from WOR in New York and jumped to the Mutual Broadcasting System and then the ABC. I don't exactly remember when the exact years were that they jumped around, but it was on the air for 11 years. Clayton Bud Collier played Superman and Clark Kent. And Superman was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster in 1938. And 2 years later, he had his own radio drama. Unlike Batman, who was created in 1939 by Bill Finger and Bob Kane, he never had his own radio drama, but made appearances on The Adventures of Superman, where Matt Crawley played him, played Batman and Bruce Wayne. It's interesting because Jack Johnstone is credited as a writer for the Superman series. He would produce The Six Shooter later on. Some of these commercials do get a little tiring, I understand, but also it's period, and that's how you heard them. You identified Kellogg's Pep with sponsoring Superman. It's really no different than the commercials you'll be seeing here during the Super Bowl, before and after, and all that good stuff. There's such build-up to the commercialization of it, it's not even funny. But anyway, is there another Superman? This story aired from the 29th of January to the 14th of February, 1946. So we'll go ahead and start with episode 11, Is There Another Superman?
Kellogg's Pep! The Super Delicious Cereal presents The Adventures of Superman!
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's Superman. Yes, it's Superman, strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Superman, defender of law and order, champion of equal rights. Valiant, courageous fighter against the forces of hate and prejudice. Today, the Man of Steel and Batman have found the bullet-ridden walkie-talkie belonging to Robin, but no clue to the whereabouts of Robin himself. We'll join them in a moment, but right now, here is Dan McCullough.
You know, I can't seem to figure out who's getting the most fun out of collecting comic buttons from packages of Kellogg's Pep, the fellows or the girls. I see the fellows busy as anything over at the playground, comparing notes and how many they've collected and swapping duplicates. Then, down the block, I see a bunch of girls owing and awing over each other's collection and swapping duplicates. And I see a lot of girls' dresses and boys' caps and girls' jackets and boys' jackets sporting lots of these bright-colored comic buttons. So, you know, I've just about decided that both fellows and girls get a great kick out of collecting Pep comic buttons nowadays. And no wonder. Why, there's the doggone smart-looking, real, true-to-life pictures of such favorite comic strip characters as Perry Winkle and Lilums and Superman himself. What's more, they're easy to get. You don't send in any money, not even a box stop. And you can't buy them anywhere. All you do is to make sure Mom gets plenty of that super delicious whole wheat flake cereal, Kellogg's Pep. inside every package, there's your exclusive prize. So get your comic buttons, gang, from P.E.P. Pep, made by Kellogg's of Battle Creek. Now, back to the adventures of Superman.
Although Superman now knows that the mysterious bank robber who wears a costume similar to his own and is apparently possessed of amazing strength is not another superhuman creature, but only an impersonator of the Man of Steel, his problem is far from over. Because Robin, young companion of the famous Batman, has disappeared. In the village of Lordville, where Robin was last seen during a fight with the mysterious burglar, Superman and Batman received a message from the boy on a walkie-talkie radio. Robin said he had trailed the bank robber to a hideout and had then been discovered and pursued. He only had time to say that he was somewhere south of State Highway 17A when a fusillade of shots was heard and the radio went dead. Carrying Batman, Superman scoured the countryside in the vicinity of the highway and finally discovered Robin's walkie-talkie in the deep grass of a deserted field. The portable radio was riddled with bullet holes. Now, holding the black box in his trembling hands, Batman looks at it in dazed bewilderment.
Robin must have been shot.
Oh, we're not sure, Batman.
He must have been. Look, this walkie-talkie is full of bullet holes.
I know it is, but
he was talking to me on it when we heard the shots. He said they were coming after him, and they shot him. And
easy.
He's dead. Robin's dead.
Now, don't jump to conclusions.
He is, I tell you. Had him trapped, and they shot him.
Listen to me, Batman. Listen to me, please.
Oh,
the boy...
he's dead. Robin is dead.
You've got to listen. Robin may be all right.
How could he be? You heard the shots yourself. Look at this radio.
I know.
He was holding it, talking to me.
I know it looks bad, but Robin's a clever youngster. I won't believe anything happened to him until I see it with my own eyes. Now, come on, pull yourself together. We've got to look for him.
Oh, where'll we look? They finished him, and they took him away somewhere. Oh, those dirty rats. I'll get them for this. I'll make them pay for what they did if it takes me the rest of my life.
That's right. Get mad. Then we can get to work.
I'll make them pay. I swear it. You hear me, Superman?
I hear you. Now, hang on to my shoulders. We're going upstairs.
Where?
Up where we can get a good view of this region. Are you ready?
Go ahead.
Okay. Here we go, then. Up! Up! Now, let's see.
You flew over here before.
Only near the highway. No, it's all open country to the north and east. Just farms and a few villages.
Well, a gang of murderers wouldn't hold up in a small village. That'd attract too much attention.
Right. Of course, they might take over a farm, but that'd be pretty risky, too. No, same kind of country to the west. Hey, wait.
What?
That patch of woods to the south.
It's pretty small to hide in.
Looks smaller than it really is from up here. Let's have a look at that.
Away! See anything down there?
Not yet.
I didn't think you would. My hunch is they made for a big city. Maybe Metropolis.
Well, I'll be... Look, Batman.
What? Where?
Almost straight down. And a little to your right. See?
No, there are too many trees in the way.
Get ready for the shock of your life. Hang on now. Here we go. Down!
Robin!
Batman!
Well, I see you two know each other.
And Superman. Listen, what happened to you up in the sky last night?
Never mind that. Are you all right?
Oh, I'm a little hungry, and I got a few ant bites in the cave where I was hiding. But apart from that, I'm ticking on all cylinders.
Oh, thank heaven.
But listen, we've got to go after the other Superman. He and his gang are up to something.
There isn't any other Superman, Robin.
That's what you think.
It was all done with mirrors. Or let's say with a miniature dirigible and a long rope ladder.
Huh? Hey, wait a minute. So that's why that big ox walked all the way here. He was limping, and I
Never mind. You know, you scared me out of 10 years of my life.
Oh, what's 10 years to a young buck like you, Pappy?
Well, listen to the insolent puppy. I ought to turn you over my knee and tan your hide.
What did I do? I know I let the guys get away, but there were too many for me, and they had guns.
You never should have gone after the bank robber alone in the first place.
Oh, I had to. You were out cold.
Yes, and you left me lying there in the bank vault. A fine pal you turned out to be.
I knew you were okay, just knocked out. Gee whiz, somebody had to go after the guy. I thought he'd done something to Superman. But now he got away and his other three pals, too.
Wait a minute, Robin. You said you trailed the man to his hideout. Where's that?
It's an old broken-down house just beyond these woods.
Well,
but...
what are we waiting for? Let's get over there.
Nobody's there, Batman. I can see it from here.
They scrammed right after the bank robber got there. First, they all ran out and kept looking up in the sky. Then they started packing up a car.
Mm-hmm. He must have told them the dirigible hadn't been at Lordville to pick him up. They were afraid it might have fallen into the hands of the police. Well, we may never find them now. Chances are they'll lie low.
No, they won't. They're up to something else. Something big.
They are?
What, Robin?
I don't know what, but it adds up to $50
million. $50 million?
That's what I heard one of them say. A fat party with a fancy vest and spats. We're going ahead anyhow, he said. That was when they were packing up their car. There's $50 million waiting for us, he said. And we're going to get it tonight.
Tonight?
What else, Robin?
That's all. They spotted me right after that and chased me.
Oh?
I got away from them. That's when I called Candy Myers on the walkie-talkie.
Uh-huh.
Say, how come you answered that, man?
Oh, we were with Candy in Lordville. Go on, then what?
They saw me and started popping at me like I was a clay pigeon. So I dumped the radio and made for these woods with them after me. I saw a little cave between some rocks and I went in like a rabbit. I stayed there a pretty long time till I was sure they were gone. And then you two showed up.
Ah, so they're after $50 million, eh? Nothing small about them.
You said it. That's practically all the money in the world.
Well, not quite, but it's enough. Well, so I was right.
What about?
The plan to pull their big job tonight, the $50 million one, and blame it on me.
Jeepers.
And that means the robbery tonight will have to be along the same lines as the previous ones. Only this time, the money won't be donated to charity.
But $50 million? Why, there's not a bank in the country with anywhere near that much cash in their vaults.
I know, that's what's bothering me.
Hey, wait a minute, wait. Maybe our strong-arm friend is planning to break into Fort Knox.
Sure, where all the gold is.
Oh, I doubt it. Gold isn't negotiable now.
Well, then what's the answer?
I don't know, Batman, but we've got to find out, and fast. Come on, let's check their hideout. It's just barely possible they may have left a clue behind.
Come on, it's just a mile or two.
I know a faster way than walking. You get under this arm, Robin. That's it, and you get under this one, Batman. There we are. All set?
All set.
Let's go.
Up and away!
Leaping up through the woods with Batman and Robin in his arms, Superman streaks to the hideout of the mysterious bank robber. We'll bring you the tense climax of today's episode in a moment, so keep listening. But first, here again is your announcer.
You know, nowadays, when you read the funny papers, you're reminded of those comic buttons all the gang's collecting from packages of Kellogg's Pep. And when you take a look at any of these Pep comic buttons, you're reminded of your favorite characters' adventures in the funny papers. Because those pictures are so doggone true to life that, well, you'd almost think that you're going to hear the siren on Smokey Stover's fire engine, or hear Orphan Annie's dog Sandy begin to bark, or hear Superman's famous up, up, and away. You see, every single one of these pictures is an accurate reproduction of one of your funny sheet favorites. It's done up in bright color, too, on gleaming white enamel buttons that look mighty classy when you pin them on your jacket or your dress or cap. Don't you feel like strutting around when you sport these classy buttons? But remember, there's only one way that you can get these Pep comic buttons. You don't buy them anywhere, and you don't send in a single penny, not even a box stop. Just make sure that Mom stocks up on that super delicious whole wheat flake cereal, Kellogg's Pep. Then, get your exclusive prizes from P.E.P. Pep, made by Kellogg's, the greatest name in cereals. Now, back to the adventures of Superman.
Arriving at the broken-down farmhouse, which had been the headquarters of the mysterious bank robber and his henchmen, Superman, Batman, and Robin searched it thoroughly, but failed to find any clue to the gang or the $50 million theft scheduled for tonight. As we join our three friends now, they are in the weather-beaten barn.
Not a thing in here either. This is where they probably kept their dirigible.
I suppose so, but that doesn't help us now. Can't understand. Say, what's this?
Huh?
What, Superman?
There's a map under this loose floorboard.
A map?
Yes. Wait till I get it.
There we are.
Oh, let's see what it is. Uh-oh. Look at this, Batman.
Let's see. Oh, it's a map of the state.
Uh-huh.
What are those ink crosses on it?
They mark the towns our bank robber visited. See? Here's Glen Forest. There's Thomasville. Lynn Haven. There's Lordville.
Uh-huh. Just the way we charted them on our map the other night.
Right. Now we know why they followed the course of a rough circle.
Why?
Because the miniature dirigible had a short cruising range. And the big valley country below Metropolis, with the large villages situated around the rim of the valley, was just right for their purposes.
Well, we know the answers to all the questions, except the $64 one, huh?
You mean the $50 million one?
Yes. Gotta find the answer before tonight.
How? Where is $50 million? All in one place, I mean.
$50 million. Something familiar about that amount.
I wouldn't mind being familiar with it.
I wouldn't even mind being friendly with it.
$50 million. Seems to me I read about it somewhere. Wait a minute. I think...
What?
It's just a vague thought, but if I'm right... Oh, I've got to be right. Listen, you two, we've got a lot of work to do, and fast. Come with me.
Where to?
Outside.
What's up?
No time to explain now. My hunch is right. We may be able to stop the biggest robbery in history and meet my impersonator face to face. Right, come on now. Under my arms with you two again. And keep your fingers crossed. This hunch has got to pay off. It must. Up! Up! And away!
Leaping up from the deserted farm, carrying Batman and Robin, Superman rockets away into the sky. What is his plan to foil the greatest robbery in history and to capture his impersonator, the mysterious bank robber who is apparently possessed of superhuman strength? Tomorrow's episode is tense and packed with thrills and action, gang, so don't miss it. Be sure to tune in, same time, same station, for the adventures of Superman.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's Superman.
Okay, that was episode number 11. Is there another Superman? Again, if you're just joining me here, Arthur, the Grand Hour on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. I had been playing serialized story, Is There Another Superman? There were three episodes left for today's show, the 30th. I'm going to go ahead and play all three of those just to conclude it, to close out January. Again, the story aired from the 29th of January to the 14th of February, 1946. It starred Clayton Bud Collier as Superman and Clark Kent, and Matt Crawley as Batman and Bruce Wayne. So, in order to not keep talking, even though it is kind of strange, the visual to have Superman carrying Batman and Robin up, up and away. Boy, how things have changed here in the 21st century with the whole Batman franchise. And actually, it has more headway than the Superman franchise does. But here we go. This will be episode 12. And again, following episode 12, I will play the concluding episode 13.
Kellogg's Pep, the super delicious cereal, presents the adventures of Superman.
Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's Superman.
Yes, it's Superman, strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Superman, defender of law and order, champion of equal rights, valiant, courageous fighter against the forces of hate and prejudice. Today, the Man of Steel feels certain he knows where the $50 million robbery is to take place. We'll get the details in a moment. But right now, let's hear from our good friend, Dan McCullough.
Say, gang, do you know why Mother likes you to play outdoors when the sun is shining? Because the sun makes good old vitamin D for you, helps build strong bones and sturdy teeth. And you know why Mom likes you to eat plenty of Kellogg's Pep in the winter, especially when there's not so much good sunshine? Because a dish of Pep gives you lots of that very same sunshine vitamin D, your daily minimum need, in fact. Yes, sir. Kellogg's Pep is a doggone sunny, nutritious cereal. Doggone good tasting, too. Full up with sunny, golden toasted flavor. Crisp as can be. Now, of course, another reason that you're glad to eat lots of Pep is because that's how you get those nifty comic buttons all the gang's collecting. Why, these Pep comic buttons are just about the best looking things you ever saw. Real, true-to-life pictures of your favorite comic strip characters done up in bright colors on gleaming white buttons that you're, well, you're mighty proud to sport on your jacket or your dress or cap. So better remind Mom to get you a good supply of Kellogg's Pep, because that's the only way you can get these swell comic buttons. You can't buy them anywhere, and you don't send in any money, not even a box top. These are exclusive prizes in packages of P.E.P. Pep, made by Kellogg's of Battle Creek. Now, the adventures of Superman.
When Robin, young assistant to the famous Batman, trailed the mysterious bank robber who has been impersonating Superman, he learned that the amazingly powerful burglar and his henchmen had planned a $50 million robbery to take place that very night. But Robin was discovered and pursued before he could overhear any details of the plot. And when Superman and Batman arrived at the hideout, they found it deserted. Carrying his two friends, the Man of Steel streaked back to Metropolis. And as we join them now, they are in the library of the Daily Planet, where for hours they have been searching through back files of the newspaper. Darkness has long since closed down over the city, and the worried frown on Superman's face deepens. Listen.
How far back have you gone, Batman?
I've just finished last July.
Read through every paper?
Everything but the one ad.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Robin?
I'm on June. Looks like the Detroit Tigers are going to win the pennant last year.
This is no time for jokes, sonny boy.
Well, I went all the way back to April and May. Jim Olsen and Lois Lane covered the first 3 months of the year. I'm sure the story I read was in the paper this year.
Can't you remember anything about the story?
No, I can't. Just that it had something to do with $50 million. I wish we could find it. It might tell us where my impersonator plans to strike tonight.
Well, that finishes June.
Maybe you read the story in some other paper.
No, I seem to remember it was in the Planet.
Well, we've covered every issue for this year. You say you're sure it wasn't before that?
No, it couldn't have been.
Oh, look. Let's try it another way.
What?
Where is there $50 million? In one place, I mean.
In the land of my dreams.
Robin.
Sorry, Pappy.
Oh, we tried that before, Batman, and didn't get anywhere. Banks don't carry that much money, and we ruled out Fort Knox. It's too heavily guarded, and besides, gold isn't negotiable now.
You had Henderson tip off Fort Knox anyway, didn't you?
Oh, sure. Oh, we've got to find that story, otherwise we're licked.
I'm afraid we are, chum.
Well, I can't be. Unless that false Superman is captured and exposed, some people will still believe that I robbed those banks. They'll no longer trust and cooperate with me, and if that happens, I'm finished.
Well, don't say that.
Well, it's true.
Robin, stop that racket.
Oh, sorry again. I can't sit still. You gents realize what time it is?
Oh, it's about 10 o'clock.
It's 5 minutes to 11.
It is.
What?
Uh-huh, and the phony Superman always does his stuff between 11 and 1.
That's right. What are we going to do, Superman?
I wish I knew.
If you think of anything, let me know. Hey, it's starting to snow.
Would you like to run home and get your sled?
Sure, why not? I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
I'll Christmas you unless you pipe down.
What?
Nothing. I just told Robin to pipe down. I'm nervous enough without his corny tenor jangling my nerves.
Oh, I resent that.
No. Wait a minute. You said something about Christmas.
Did I? Yes.
Wait a minute. Christmas.
What's the matter with him?
Search me.
I've got it.
Huh?
What?
The story I was looking for. It's in the magazine section of the Planet's special Christmas edition.
You sure?
Yes.
I didn't see any magazine sections.
Well, they're filed separately on this shelf over here. Christmas issue should be in this pile. Here we are. Wade in. Find the Christmas number.
Come on, Robin.
Let me at him.
These are the February issues.
I've got January.
Here are the December ones. December 30th, 23rd.
23rd, that's the one. Let me have it, Robin.
Well, this is the 23rd. Christmas is...
That's the Christmas number. The magazine section only appears on Sundays.
Oh.
Now, let's see. Story on the UNO. Actions. Here it is.
Where?
Right here. See? A story on the oldest banknote company in the country, the Metropolis Banknote Corporation.
What's a banknote corporation?
It makes paper money for the government.
I thought the Mint did that.
Well, the Mint makes all the coins, but not all the paper money. Now, let's see. Oh, here we are. Listen to this. Founded during the American Revolution and still situated on its original site on Lower Dock Street, the Metropolis Banknote Corporation will begin printing its final issue of paper money for the United States government on Christmas Day. An issue of, get this, $50 million will be printed at the rate of $1 million per day and will be completed on February 13th.
Wait, that's today.
Right.
Jeepers.
Listen, the money will be stored in the corporation's time-honored vaults until the issue is completed. On the following day, February 14th, it will be removed to the United States Treasury, and the Metropolis Banknote Corporation, oldest company of its kind in America, will formally close its doors, its long career of service at an end. Well, there it is.
What are we waiting for?
You took the words right out of my mouth, Pappy.
Come on, this might be the answer.
My hunch says you're right. There's exactly $50 million in the corporation's vaults right now.
And the phony Superman means to bust in and collect it.
Well, if he does, we'll collect him. I'll just raise this window.
What for?
The Superman Express leaves on this track, John.
Oh, fancy me forgetting that. Do you prefer the right arm or the left arm compartment, Batman?
No time for clowning now, Robin. Under this arm with you.
Check.
You under this arm, Batman?
Double check.
All right, hang on. Here we go. Out.
Up. And away!
Leaping from the Daily Planet library with Batman and Robin in his arms, Superman streaks through the night sky to the wholesale warehouse district on the river. Dark and deserted at this late hour. On Lower Dock Street, the Man of Steel swoops low over an ancient dust-grimed tomb-like structure, its doors and windows heavily barred, only its first floor showing illumination.
There it is, the Metropolis Banknote Corporation.
Well, everything looks quiet on the outside. What does your X-ray vision say about the inside, Superman?
All quiet there, too. Just a few guards sitting around.
Sitting around?
It'd be a tough job breaking into that old fortress, Robin.
Not for our bank robber friend. He's got superhuman strength.
I wonder if he has.
You wouldn't wonder if you tangled with him like Batman and I did.
He's almost as strong as you are, Superman.
I still wonder.
Have you forgotten how he ripped those 6-inch steel doors off their hinges?
I'll have to see him do it before I believe it.
Stubborn cuss, isn't he?
Maybe he'll find out for himself tonight.
That's what I'm hoping. And the sooner the better. All right, we'll drop down and hide in the shadows across the street. Here we go. Down!
What's that?
The chime clock in the export company tower. Just 11.
Yeah, we ought to get action pretty soon, then.
Keep your fingers crossed.
There go those chimes again. It's midnight.
Smart boy. You can tell time. Counts up to 12, too.
Good.
I just want to count how many times we can bounce that phony Superman off the floor.
He bounced us the last two times.
They say the third time is the charm. Where is he?
That's what I'd like to know, Robin. That's what I'd like to know.
Oh, 1 o'clock. The latest he ever showed up to rob a bank was just a minute or two after one.
I know.
He did most of his jobs before midnight. I hope we didn't guess wrong.
Make that hope for two.
Wait.
What?
There's a car coming. The big fellow's driving it. Two men are in the back seat.
Where?
Is it?
Oh.
What now?
No soap. They turned off into River Street.
Oh.
Shucks.
Superman.
Yes?
I'm no crepe hanger, but he's always showed up before this. Maybe we drew the wrong car tonight.
I don't know. I was sure we didn't. But I'm beginning to have a few doubts myself.
You mean while we're hanging around this place, a phony Superman might be making his haul someplace else?
It could be, Robin.
Jeepers.
Well, we won't give up the ship yet. This is our only hope. Come on, you two. Hang on. We're going up to cruise around a bit. All set? Up! Up! And away!
Anxiously, Superman, carrying Batman and Robin, circles over the dark warehouse district, his keen eyes searching for the mysterious bank robber. Have our friends guessed wrong? And is the largest burglary in history occurring at another place? We'll return in a moment to find out. But first, here again is your announcer.
Gang, you know how it is. When you get excited about something, sometimes you get your words all mixed up. Well, the other day, a young pal of mine got so excited when his mother opened a new package of Kellogg's Pep. He said, "Gee, Mom, just what I need in my collection. Jilin Smack." Well, of course he was talking about Smilin' Jack, one of those funny paper characters on the Pep comic buttons all the gang's collecting. Any one of those 18 different buttons is really something to get excited about, because the pictures of your comic strip favorites are straight from the funny papers. Why, Smitty has his familiar big wide grin, and Superman is wearing his famous flying red cape and Superman insignia. I'm telling you, these Pep comic buttons are real humdingers. And you know what the best part is? They're easy as anything to get. You don't have to send in a single penny, not even a box top. Fact is, you can't buy these comic buttons anywhere. All you do is make sure Mom keeps you supplied with plenty of that super delicious whole wheat flake cereal, Kellogg's Pep. Inside every package, there's your exclusive prize. That's P-E-P, Pep, made by Kellogg's, the greatest name in cereals. Now, back to the adventures of Superman.
It is now 1:30 in the morning. Superman with Batman and Robin is still cruising high in the air above the tomb-like Metropolis Banknote Corporation, in whose underground vaults $50 million is stored.
But the mysterious bank robber who masquerades as the Man of Steel has not put in an appearance. And our friends are fast losing their last bit of hope.
Oh, I'm afraid we missed the boat, Superman.
We didn't even get close enough to wave.
I hate to agree, but it... Wait a minute.
What's the matter?
We didn't miss the boat.
Huh? What do you mean?
The false Superman has arrived.
He has?
Where? I don't see him.
He and six other men are in a tunnel under the bank company vaults.
A tunnel?
Yes. It's an old sewer tunnel. Below the underground vaults where the $50 million is stored.
Jeepers.
All right, take a deep breath now. In a moment, we're going to meet my impersonator and find out if he's as strong as you say he is.
Tensely, Batman and Robin wait for Superman to act, to bring them face to face with the mysterious bank robber, who even now is clothed in a blue costume and red cape identical to the Man of Steel's, and who apparently possesses superhuman strength. What will happen when these two meet? Tomorrow brings the smashing climax of our story, fellows and girls, and an amazing surprise. So be sure to listen. Tune in, same time, same station, and thrill to the adventures of Superman.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's Superman.
Fellows and girls, be sure to follow the adventures of Superman. Brought to you every day, Monday through Friday, same time, same station, by the grand old Kellogg Company of Battle Creek. And for other thrilling...
Okay, that was Is There Another Superman? That was part 12. I'm going to be concluding this. Well, it says tomorrow, so I guess the original air date for that one, for episode 12, would have been the 13th of February, 1946. I'm figuring this out just by process of elimination, I reckon. So next, I'll play the concluding episode in the series, which would be number 13. First, this message.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0. All guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Medford. Okay, thanks to Digital George, Digital Henry. Again, Batman was created in 1939. By Bill Finger and Bob Kane. Superman was created in 1938 by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. And in 1940, Superman had his own radio drama. Batman never was afforded that luxury, but made several appearances on The Adventures of Superman. The totality of the show aired from 1940 to 1951. I got the benchers planted under me here, just because I've been doing that every the last few weeks. Again, Clayton Bud Collier played Superman and Clark Kent. Matt Crawley played Batman and Bruce Wayne. I'll play this out, and we'll play the concluding episode of Is There Another Superman? Thanks for listening. I'm Arthur, and this is The Grand Hour on 91.5 FM. And or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio.
the Super Delicious Cereal presents
The Adventures of Superman.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's Superman.
Yes, it's Superman, strange visitor from another planet, who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Superman, defender of law and order, champion of equal rights, valiant, courageous fighter against the forces of hate and prejudice. Today we conclude our story of the strange bank robberies. So stand by for the dramatic climax with Superman, Batman, and Robin, and the beginning of a brand new story. But now, let's see what's going on over at Dan McCullough's house this afternoon.
Dan!
Hi, Sally. Come on in the living room.
Oh, Dan, it's the best Valentine I ever got.
Yeah? Which one?
The one you sent, of course, with a comic button on it.
Oh, yeah. That's from a package of Kellogg's Pep we opened the other day.
Oh, I'm so thrilled.
Hey, Dan, where are you?
Hi, Rusty. Come on in.
Hey, Dan, that's a swell idea. A Valentine with a comic button for my collection.
I got one, too, Rusty.
Yeah? Which one?
Moon Mullins.
I got the Superman button.
Oh.
You got Moon Mullins?
Yes.
Swap your Superman for Moon Mullins.
Yeah, that's the idea. Cinch that trade right away.
You don't mind, do you, Dan?
Why, of course not. All the gang knows that's a swell way to get a new and different comic button for your collection. And all the gang's mighty busy these days, working toward all 18 buttons in the series. Of course, it's a real help that these comic buttons are so easy to get. You don't have to send in a single penny, not even a box stop. And you can't buy them anywhere. All you do is to ask Mom to get you some of that super delicious whole wheat flake cereal, Kellogg's Pep. Inside every package, there's an exclusive prize for you. Remember, that's P-E-P, Pep, made by Kellogg's of Battle Creek. Now, the adventures of Superman.
Learning that a mysterious bank robber who has been impersonating him and apparently possesses superhuman strength planned a $50 million burglary, Superman and his friends, Batman and Robin, found a clue in a back issue of the Daily Planet. The Metropolis Banknote Company, which prints paper money for the Treasury, had that day completed the printing of $50 million and had stored it in the company's underground vaults. Carrying Batman and Robin, Superman hovered in the dark sky above the ancient tomb-like building, and shortly after 1 o'clock in the morning, his X-ray vision spotted the mysterious bank robber and six men in an old sewer tunnel directly beneath the vaults. As we continue now, having obtained entrance to the building, our three friends are in the basement vaults. Listen.
What are they doing now, Superman?
Removing the loose concrete.
What loose concrete?
Under a section of this floor. They must have been working on it a long time. The concrete is at least 8 inches thick.
Jesus.
Okay, get ready. They'll be coming through any second now.
All right.
False Superman is finishing the job with a padded sledgehammer. Hey, he is pretty strong.
He's plenty strong. Robin and I tangled with him and got bounced around like rubber dolls, we know.
Yeah, and don't forget how he ripped open the steel bank doors.
Hold it. It's broken through. Now, listen, let me handle this.
Are you kidding? You said he had six huskies with him.
I know, but
watch
I should...
Watch it. Here comes the first guy through the hole.
Quick, behind the vaults. Okay, now don't show yourselves until I give the word.
Are the others coming up?
Yes. We'll wait until they're all above decks, and then we'll move.
Quiet now.
There are six of them, and the phony Superman, huh?
Yes. We're outnumbered just enough to make it interesting.
Okay. Let's jump them before they can get to their guns. Leave the man in the costume and cape to me.
All right.
Let's go, Robin.
Right with you, Pappy.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hey, look, three guys.
What's this? We need you here.
Oh, here's my calling card. Read it when you wake up.
Get out of here. You're the one I want to meet. All right, my phony friend. Let's see if you do have superhuman strength.
Nice going, Robin. Stay away from those guns, mister.
Yeah.
Oh, you won't, huh?
Love you.
Okay.
Swing your eyes a bit.
Oh, atta boy, Batman. Oh, your eyes are popping out. Ranger, do you mind if I pop back in for you? Hey, I'm running out of sparring partners, Batman. There's just this one left.
I'll take him. Pardon me, friend. You're the shin show.
Well, there were six little gunmen, but now there are none. Now we can help Superman.
He doesn't need any help. Look behind you.
Christopher Columbus. He's swinging the phony around like a Ferris wheel.
I get dizzy. What, Boris?
By all means, we've got some talking to do. Down on your feet.
There we are.
You strong like lion.
Superman's got him tamed, Robin.
Tame as a kitten.
Now, what's your name?
I, Boris.
Boris what?
Boris Mikhailovich Petrovsky.
Oh, brother, what a mouthful.
Quiet, Robin.
I not bad man. I do nothing wrong.
Oh, no?
How about robbing all those banks?
I no keep money. I give to charity,
sure, to make the police think I was the thief. But the $50 million in these vaults weren't going to charity. This was the big deal you were building up to. You intended to keep this money and brand me as the burglar.
Oh, I no keep any money. Mr. Simpson, he say, all this I do is, publicity. It gets Boris very big name.
Why did you want to get publicity?
Boris go on stage, make money.
The stage?
Da-da. People pay much money see Boris. Strongest man in whole world. Mr. Simpson, he say, Boris make lots money.
Who's Mr. Simpson?
That he there, lie on floor.
Fancy vest and spats?
Da-da. He give it ticket, come America. He say, make Boris rich man. He say, Boris do like he say, get much of
I think he's telling the truth, Robin.
I don't. Nobody could be that dumb.
Da. Mr. Simpson say, Boris very dumb. That mean Boris very strong, no?
You say you believe him, Superman?
Yes, I think he was taken advantage of by this Simpson.
Played for a sucker, you mean?
That's right. Of course, we'll check on his story. Tell me, Boris, how did you open those bank doors and vaults?
And how did you bend those steel bars into pretzels?
Hey, Mr. Simpson, give Boris this.
What's that?
Looks like an aluminum cylinder.
It's just what it is. There are three electronic tubes inside it and a battery strapped around his chest.
Boris hold this to door, steel gets soft.
Gets soft?
Da. It start melt. Then Boris take hold and pull the rest away. Not hard for so strong men like me.
Great, Jupiter. You mean this thing melts steel?
I don't believe it.
I do. I've heard of diathermic rays used to soften steel. Remember I showed you how the bank door in Lordville was wrenched out of shape, Batman?
Yeah, that's right.
But it was done with this electronic gadget.
Well, I'll be jiggered.
Oh. Here comes the police. Henderson's eyes are going to pop when he sees these goons stretched out on the floor.
You think they got a jail strong enough to hold this guy?
Oh, no. Please, I no go jail. I not be bad.
Well, that'll be up to a judge to decide, Boris. That's how we do things here in America.
But I, Boris, I good man. I not do nothing.
Order in the court! Boris Petrovsky!
Step up, Boris.
Da.
Since it is evident that you're only an innocent dupe in the hands of George Simpson, alias George Tanner, with a long police record, this court is patrolling you in the custody of Clark Kent. Court adjourned.
You're free, Boris. The judge isn't sending you to jail.
Oh, I kiss the hand of judge.
Never mind that. Come along. I'm going to get you a job operating one of the Daily Planet presses where you can put some of that strength of yours to good use.
Oh, I am so happy. So glad.
Tears of happiness rolling down his cheeks, Boris, the big Russian, leaves the courtroom in the custody of his newfound friend, the man he had innocently tried to wrong. And so Superman has solved another baffling mystery. But if he thinks he can lean back and relax, he is sadly mistaken. For at this very moment, another adventure is brewing. This one more amazing than any that have gone before. We'll return in a moment to begin a new Superman adventure. But first, here is your announcer.
You know, gang, it'd be a doggone shame if you should miss out on a single one of those swell comic buttons Kellogg's Pep is putting out. Because every single one of these 18 different buttons is so bright colored and gleaming. Why, they look mighty smart pinned on your jacket or your dress or cap. And every single picture of your favorite comic strip characters is a dead ringer for one of the friends you've been following in the funny papers for a long time. And here's something else that you wouldn't want to miss. The exciting fun of getting a new button every time Mom opens a new package of Pep. And even more fun trading duplicates with your pals. So hop to it, gang. Ask Mom to get you some more of that super delicious whole wheat flake cereal, Kellogg's Pep. That's the only way you can get these comic buttons.
You don't send in a single penny, not even a box stop, and you can't buy them anywhere. But there's an exclusive prize for you in every package of P.E.P. Pep, made by Kellogg's, the greatest name in cereals. Now, back to the adventures of Superman.
Our scene is the city room of...
The conclusion of Is There Another Superman? I actually had the wrong headphones on, so I couldn't really hear what I wanted to. So, that has a nice Cold War twist, 1946. That original episode aired on Valentine's Day. Again, The Adventures of Superman ran from 1940 to 1941. Started on WOR in New York, jumped to the Mutual Broadcasting System, and then to ABC. Starred Clayton Bud Collier as Superman and Clark Kent. Matt Crawley played Batman, Bruce Wayne, and Jack Johnstone is credited as a writer on the whole entire series. There was another gentleman credited there, but I single him out because he went on to produce one of my favorite, and I guess that some listeners' favorites, The Six Shooter, although I haven't played a six shooter in a month or and a half, so I might have lost some of that. Superman came out in 1938, and 2 years later, he had his own radio drama, unlike Batman, created in 1939. Never had his. It's the intention I had in playing these Supermans with Batman. I'm going to change directions now. Hopefully, the Grand Hour will be back next Wednesday. The new scheduling comes out shortly, this weekend, I believe. Next month, February, I'll have a couple of... I'm looking into a couple of dramas that'll be fitting for the month. Not Valentine's Day. I had a show last year on Valentine's Day. It's not going to fall on that day this year. But again, a couple of things fitting for the month. Spring training, Black History Month, so forth. So in order to transition to that, I'm just going to go ahead and play one of the writer that always tickles me. It's Richard Brautigan. I believe this is a Revenge excerpt. Well, it's actually the story, The Revenge of the Lawn, from his book, a collection of short stories and poems, Revenge of the Lawn. Thanks for listening. This is Arthur at the Grand Hour on 91.5 FM, WMFO, Tufts Freeform Radio.
This is a short story called Revenge of the Lawn. My grandmother, in her own way, shines like a beacon down the stormy American past. She was a bootlegger in a little county up in the state of Washington. She was also a handsome woman, close to 6 feet tall, who carried 190 pounds in the grand operatic manner of the early 1900s. And her specialty was bourbon, a little raw, but a welcomed refreshment in those Volstead Act days. She, of course, was no female Al Capone, but her bootlegging feats were the cornucopia of legend in her neck of the woods, as they say. She had the county in her pocket for years. The sheriff used to call her up every morning and give her the weather report and tell her how the chickens were laying. I can imagine her talking to the sheriff. "Well, Sheriff, I hope your mother gets better soon. I had a cold and a bad sore throat last week myself. I've still got the sniffles. Tell her hello for me and to drop by the next time she's down this way. And if you want that case, you can pick it up or I can have it sent over as soon as Jack gets back with the car. No, I don't know if I'm going to the fireman's ball this year, but you know that my heart is with the firemen. If you don't see me there tonight, you tell the boys that. No, I'll try to get there, but I'm still not fully recovered from my cold. It kind of climbs on me in the evening. Lived in a three-story house that was old even in those days. There was a pear tree in the front yard which was heavily eroded by rain from years of not having any lawn. The picket fence that once enclosed the lawn was gone too, and people just drove their cars right up to the porch. In the winter, the front yard was a mud hole, and in the summer, it was hard as a rock. Jack used to curse the front yard as if it were a living thing. He was the man who lived with my grandmother for 30 years. He was not my grandfather, but an Italian who came down the road one day selling lots in Florida. He was selling a vision of eternal oranges and sunshine door to door in a land where people ate apples and it rained a lot. Jack stopped at my grandmother's house to sell her a lot just a stone's throw from downtown Miami, and he was delivering her whiskey a week later. He stayed for 30 years, and Florida went on without him. Jack hated the front yard because he thought it was against him. There had been a beautiful lawn there when Jack came along, but he let it wander off into nothing. He refused to water it or take care of it in any way. Now the ground was so hard that it gave his car flat tires in the summer. The yard was always finding a nail to put in one of his tires, or the car was always sinking out of sight in the winter when the rains came on. The lawn had belonged to my grandfather, who lived out the end of his life in an insane asylum. It had been his pride and joy, and was said to be the place where his powers came from. My grandfather was a minor Washington mystic who in 1911 prophesied the exact start, June 28, 1914. But it had been too much for him. He never got to enjoy the fruit of his labor because they had to put him away in 1913, and he spent 17 years in the state insane asylum, believing he was a child, and it was actually May 3rd, 1872. He believed that he was 6 years old, and it was a cloudy day about to rain, and his mother was baking a chocolate cake. It stayed May 3rd, 1872 for my grandfather until he died in 1930. It took 17 years for that chocolate cake to be baked. There was a photograph of my grandfather. I look a great deal like him, the only difference being that I am over 6 feet tall and he was not quite 5 feet tall. He had a dark idea that being so short, so close to the earth and his lawn, would help to prophesy the exact date when World War I would start. It was a shame that the war started without him. If only he could have held back his childhood for another year, avoided that chocolate cake, all of his dreams would have come true. There were always two large dents in my grandmother's house that had never been repaired, and one of them came about this way. In the autumn, the pears would get ripe on the tree in the front yard, and the pears would fall on the ground and rot, and bees would gather by the hundreds to swarm on them. The bees, somewhere along the line, had picked up the habit of stinging Jack two or three times a year. They would sting him in the most ingenious ways. Once a bee got in his wallet, and he went down to the store to buy some food for dinner, not knowing the mischief that he carried in his pocket. He took out his wallet to pay for the food. "That will be 72 cents," the grocer said. Jack replied, looking down to see a bee busy stinging him on the little finger. The first large dent in the house was brought about by still another bee, landing on Jack's cigar as he was driving the car into the front yard that Perry autumn the stock market crashed. The bee ran down the cigar. Jack could only stare at it cross-eyed in terror and stung him on the upper lip. His reaction to this was to drive the car immediately into the house. That front yard had quite a history after Jack let the lawn go to hell. One day in 1932, Jack was off running an errand or delivering something for my grandmother. She wanted to dump the old mash and get a new batch going. Because Jack was gone, she decided to do it herself. Grandmother put on a pair of railroad overalls that she used for working around the still and filled a wheelbarrow with mash and dumped it out in the front yard. She had a flock of snow-white geese that roamed outside the house and nested in the garage that had not been used to park the car since the time Jack had come along selling futures in Florida. Jack had some kind of idea that it was all wrong for a car to have a house. I think it was something that he learned in the old country. The answer was in Italian, because that was the only language Jack used when he talked about the garage. For everything else, he used English, but it was only Italian for the garage. After Grandmother had dumped the mash on the ground near the pear tree, she went back to the still down in the basement, and the geese gathered all around the mash and started talking it over. I guess they came to a mutually agreeable decision because they all started eating the mash. As they ate the mash, their eyes got brighter and brighter, and their voices, in appreciation of the mash, got louder and louder. After a while, one of the geese stuck his head in the mash and forgot to take it out. Another one of the geese cackled madly and tried to stand on one leg and give a W.C. Fields imitation of a stork. He maintained that position for about a minute before he fell on his tail feathers. My grandmother found them all lying around the mash in the positions that they had fallen. They looked as if they had been machine-gunned. From the height of her operatic splendor, she thought they were all dead. She responded to this by plucking all their feathers and piling their bald bodies in the wheelbarrow and wheeling them down to the basement. She had to make 5 trips to accommodate them. She stacked them like cordwood near the still and waited for Jack to return and dispose of them in a way that would provide a goose for dinner and a small profit by selling the rest of the flock in town. She went upstairs to take a nap after finishing with the still. It was about an hour later that the geese woke up. They had devastating hangovers. They had all kind of gathered themselves uselessly to their feet when suddenly one of the geese noticed that he did not have any feathers. He informed the other geese of their condition, too. They were all in despair. They paraded out of the basement in a forlorn and wobbly gang. They were all standing in a cluster near the pear tree when Jack drove into the front yard. The memory of the time he had been stung on the mouth by that bee must have come back to his mind when he saw the defeathered geese standing there, because suddenly, like a madman, he tore out the cigar he had stuck in his mouth and threw it away from him as hard as he could. This caused his hand to travel through the windshield, a feat that cost him 32 stitches. The geese stood by, staring on like some helpless, primitive American advertisement for aspirin under the pear tree as Jack drove his car into the house for the second and last time in the 20th century. The first time I remember anything in life occurred in my grandmother's front yard. The year was either 1936 or 1937. I remember a man, probably Jack, cutting down the pear tree and soaking it with kerosene. It looks strange, even for a first memory of life, to watch a man pour gallons and gallons of kerosene all over a tree lying stretched out 30 feet or so on the ground, and then to set fire to it while the fruit was still green on the branches.
Richard Brodigan reading Revenge of the Lawn. That was recorded off of an album, 1969 Harvest album, by a friend of mine and sent to me. So I know I had a caller indicating wanting to know what it was, and then I received a text saying there was some data background noise there that I didn't hear it. But when I didn't hear it when I was previewing it and whatnot. This is Arthur. You're listening to the Grand Hour. We're listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM, WMFO, and or WMFO.org. Marco should be up next, although I haven't seen him. But I'm going to go ahead and sign off because my time is over. Hopefully I will.